Now, from the left coast to the D.C. Beltway, covering the topics you love to hate and hate to miss, it's the Silk or Joe Show.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome to the Silk or Joe Show. Co-host Joe with you all this morning. As always, happy to be here with you. And the Silk or Joe Show is happy to come to you, courtesy of the Main Street Radio Network. So you do want to thank them for allowing this program to exist. And you can find us at mainstreetradionetwork.com. where you can also find the Main Street Radio Network, of course. Give them some hits on that browser tab there of yours, and you can also advance us in the search engines, so we would appreciate that. And again, that's mainstreetradionetwork.com. And on that website, you can find podcasts for the show, and you can find also the Al and Nathan Show, which is a great show as well. I would know because I host it quite regularly now after the late Al Nathan's passing. So then that's mainstreetbandnetwork.com. You can also go to alnathan.com for that matter if you're curious about that program. And we are also on social media. We're on Facebook at Main Street Radio Network, X at Main Street Radio, and X at Al and Nathan, in case you are curious as to when I host that program and what I will talk about once I host that program. As for the Silk or Joe Show, I don't know. I haven't gotten around to posting on our Getter, GETTR.com, at Silk or Joe Show page. I don't know if I'm going to bother continuing that this year or not. I haven't gotten any new followers on there. It's too much for me to remember because I'm an old man and I can only remember so many things. But anyway, some stuff that's going on now that we're going to get into the current event. Oh yeah, I did not thank the Salem Radio Network. Pardon me, I should thank the Salem Radio Network for distributing this show. And now I will get into those topics I was thinking about here. So we have rioters in Minneapolis, of course. Police are ordered to stand down. Rioters smash into ICE vehicles. Kind of an insurrection there, so Trump would be justified in going on with the Insurrection Act. And this happened the same night that Tim Walz is out there telling protesters that Trump is an evil terrorist threat to the state. It's everything's terrible, and they have a right to resist the Trump administration. Of course, Walz just said that you should record everything ICE does, go up there, harass agents, record them. He didn't say go smash the cars, so gets off on that technicality there. But we know from the January 6th precedent the Democrats set that Tim Walz's speech actually did trigger this. But they also stole ammunition and sensitive documents there while local police did nothing, of course. Now, here I am, sitting in the state of Virginia, where the state legislature is introducing a slew of gun control bills. That's okay, they don't have a problem with that. These guys are over here stealing ammunition in Minneapolis. Democrats are okay with stealing ammunition. That's no problem. But law-abiding citizens, we're going to put all sorts of limits on what you can do to obtain firearms and ammunition. There's other states that have been floating high taxes on ammo, and states that have floated background checks to buy ammunition, because Democrats don't want you to own a firearm and defend yourself in case they decide that there needs to be a riot. But they are perfectly happy to let their rioters steal ammunition and steal firearms. That they have no problem with their rioters being armed to the teeth. We saw that in Seattle. Remember the Seattle autonomous zone that they set up where it eventually ended after two black kids were killed trying to get in? And that was the straw that broke the camel's back for the city's leadership to clear the place out, although it probably was about to clear out on its own. There wasn't that much resistance when they did go in to clear it out. But during the time that that zone was active, there were felons patrolling the streets with firearms. Of course, people were being raped, beaten, and robbed in that time frame as well, probably by these same people, criminals patrolling with firearms. But Democrats had no problem with that. Gun control ceased to be an issue for that brief time period where left-wing mobs were roaming the streets with firearms carried illegally. Same with the Kyle Rittenhouse situation. This left-wing mob that decided he needed to die because he put a fire out. There were prohibited persons carrying firearms. Democrats considered them martyrs, heroes, for trying to kill someone for putting out a fire. And they didn't care that these folks were illegally in possession of firearms. So it seems that the only people Democrats really don't want to have guns are, well, you and me, their victims, the people that they plan to victimize. Of course, we see that kind of anarcho-tyranny all over the place anywhere we have leftist regimes in charge. Look at the UK, for example, how they have very stringent weapons laws. You cannot carry a knife with you in public, like even a steak knife, you can't carry that around. But then they allow Muslim rape gangs to roam around with scimitars, no problem. Roam around, threaten people, no problem at all. Whereas you get arrested if you post something negative about the concept of immigration on social media. The police will show up and arrest you. But then these gangs of Islamic folks, they get to roam around with big knives and hurl any kind of insult they care to at anyone they care to with total impunity. And get to say all sorts of nasty things about other races, about other governments, about Israel, about everybody. Whereas, again, you are arrested if you are a law-abiding UK citizen who has been disarmed by your government if you just merely say, I don't like what those people are doing in the street. In fact, a Jewish dude walked by with a yarmulke on his head because he was just coming out of synagogue, walked past one of those Muslim protest gangs to go home, and the police harassed him, said, you shouldn't be here. You have no right to be here around these Muslims. Now, if you went on social media and posted that those Muslims had no right to be around you, you'd be arrested. So it's that kind of favoritism that the left shows whenever they're in power. And we're seeing that now in Minneapolis, where leftists are allowing their rioters to do whatever they care to, telling the police to stand down. Meanwhile, you have their supporters in the government saying that ICE agents, they don't need to have such excessive force. In fact, you see that in social media too. I talked about that on the Al Nathan show earlier this week, how people were on social media lamenting how ICE agents didn't used to have these scare tactics where they show up with 50 people or whatever, or they show up with masks and surround you or whatever. And yeah, they didn't used to do that because Democrats didn't used to riot whenever they showed up. But now Democrats are rioting whenever they show up. And, you know, Governor Tim Walz was the one who was doing it during his primetime address saying, Trump is the one who's going to escalate things. Trump wants to escalate the situation in Minneapolis and Minnesota. But then what do you have that very night? You have a Venezuelan try and kill an ICE agent, followed by rioting by Democrats. I don't think Trump is the one trying to escalate the situation here. Trump isn't the one who is escalating at all. How can you say that Trump is escalating when you're the ones who are in the streets rioting and supporting people who try to murder ICE agents? It's because this was all kicked off by a left-wing domestic terrorist who decided that there would be no consequences for her actions, much like the rioters later on, and rioters in prior years, mind you, because this is just a repeat of 2020. And she decided that, hey, I can kill an ICE agent and get away with it. So she aimed her car and tried to run one over and faced consequences for that very poor choice that she made. But she was in an environment where everyone from her wife to everyone she knew on social media enabled her and told her that what she did was just and glorious and she was a terrific person for doing it. And she paid the ultimate price for everyone else's deceptions. Now these rioters in Minneapolis, they're going around, they facing no consequences for their actions. None at all. No one's going to get arrested for this. And again, extensive documents were stolen, ammunition was stolen. What do you think they're going to do with that ammunition? You have people on social media saying that they're going to hunt and kill ICE agents, that left-wing protesters need to arm themselves with guns and kill ICE agents. And you say, and now they're stealing ammunition to do that. But Trump is the one who's escalating things? Really? Trump isn't the one who tried to kill an ICE agent, whether with his car or with a shovel. That was people that the left are trying to protect. And the reason you need so many ICE agents in the community is because the left is trying to protect these killers and rioting around ICE agents and swarming them in order to protect these people. What would happen if, hypothetically, after January 6th, a community rioted and swarmed to protect an individual who was involved in it that the FBI was coming to get under the Biden administration? You know damn well the media would be just... Biden would probably sign some legislation that would be passed by the Republicans in Congress that with some of their support, saying that Trump supporters are domestic terrorists right after that such a thing would happen. And then suddenly, if you voted for Trump, you'd be in an internment camp, as Democrats apparently had wanted. And, you know, this goes all the way back to a poll from 2022 saying that they wanted the unvaccinated in concentration camps. But anyway, that's how radical and nutty this scenario is. But Democrats think they can get away with it because, well, they own the state, so they will get away with it. Unless Trump does something like declare an insurrection's in progress, which it is, because this is against federal law enforcement. Let's not forget this. It's not like there's any tyranny going on. These people are just here to enforce laws that are on the books. That's it. The law says if you are in the country illegally, you can be deported. Well, that's what they're there to do. But Democrats don't want that. Probably because it's all this fraud that is supporting the Democrat Party, and Tim Walz will be the hill that they die on to support that fraud and keep the party afloat. They are desperate. More Silk or Joe Show after this break.
In a rare moment in entertainment, a blockbuster film release and a major game expansion in the Avatar universe dropping together. It's a crossover that has movie studios and game developers building worlds in tandem. Futurist and innovation leader Matt Maher explains.
Instead of releasing a film and then a game later as a bonus, developers are now designing these worlds together from day one. And we're seeing that play out now with Avatar Frontiers of Pandora from the Ashes. The expansion builds on its base game Avatar Frontiers of Pandora, and players really get to live some of the key experiences from the new film on their own terms. Visually speaking, the game is stunning, lush, bioluminescent greenery, realistic wildlife, many of the features that have positioned the Avatar films among the greats. You can soar on your Banshee, master new Na'vi abilities in combat, and take on story missions that bridges with the film's events. Instead of watching the adventure unfold, you get to participate in it and control your own fate, all while uncovering never-before-seen parts of Pandora.
You can go to Ubisoft.com to learn more about From the Ashes.
Coaching college cheer has been my life's work. I have put together the most disciplined teams to ever take the mat. Oh, this is not them.
In the tradition of The Office and Parks and Recreation, NBC's new hit comedy Stumble is a mockumentary about the high-stakes competitive world of junior college cheer. Jen Lyon stars as Coach Courtney Potter, who needs one more trophy to be crowned the winningest coach in college cheer history. But after getting fired for partying with her team, she must start over and coach a bunch of misfits at a junior college in a tiny Oklahoma town. Kristen Chenoweth also stars as the hilarious Coach Tammy, along with Saturday Night Live alum Taryn Killam as Boone.
In order to qualify for the Nationals, I've got to get a team to cheer camp. I'm giving you the opportunity to toss girls in the air and get all the attention you want.
Damn, that's my dream.
Don't miss the hit comedy Stumble, returning Friday nights on NBC in January. The first six episodes are now streaming on Peacock. As we begin a new year, many families are looking for simple ways to slow down, reset routines, and make time for what matters most. That's why TikTok partnered with small business owner and TikTok creator Linda Tong Planners to launch the For You Calendar, a free physical weekly planner that helps organize your activities alongside moments of connection, whether that's taking time to meditate, discovering a new book, or connecting with your favorite creator online. Lisa Hayes, head of safety public policy and senior counsel for TikTok, helps families shape their TikTok experience.
At TikTok, we're always trying to help busy families connect and build balanced online habits. Our For You calendar brings families together to plan their time intentionally. It joins resources like family pairing and our time and well-being space that empower parents and teens to confidently navigate their settings and make time for things that bring them joy.
To order your free For You calendar, visit lindatongplanners.com.
The mission of Paralyzed Veterans of America is clear. Accessibility. Veterans who have served and sacrificed the best of themselves deserve access to the best our country has to offer. Access to meaningful employment. Access to the veterans' benefits they've earned. Accessible homes and vehicles. And access to every part of their communities. With PVA staff working inside VA hospitals, no other veterans organization has provided more real-time, ongoing support for paralyzed veterans and their families. PVA is proud to serve veterans across all branches, all generations, and all conflicts. Our nation's heroes fought for your independence. Join PVA in fighting for theirs at PVA.org.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with you all here today. So we are talking now about with the William Diaz. I really butchered it because I got a surprise email and I had to call up the script real quick. We are talking with William D'Agostino. He is a senior research analyst at the Media Research Center. William D'Agostino, appreciate you being on the show. How are you today?
Doing great. How's it going?
Yep. Well, it was going well until I got this weird email saying something sent that should have sent hours ago. But so we are talking now about this interview that Trump had with CBS's Tony DuCapo. And yeah, I thought he would be as reasonable as he was in the interview, because I remember seeing the coverage that CBS did of Butler, Pennsylvania, after Trump was the assassination attempt on him that claimed the life of someone in the audience. And I remember he was sitting next to Margaret Brennan, and she was saying that Trump was allegedly shot. He alleges on his social media page that he was shot, and Tony is like, well, he actually was shot. So I had high hopes for him after that, and he didn't particularly disappoint me, but boy, he disappointed his peers in the media. What happened there?
Yeah, I mean, so he's kind of been on a bit of an arc since about shortly after the October 7 attack in Israel a few years ago. We trace it all back to this one specific interview he did with that like race Marxist activist Ta-Nehisi Coates, who was basically trying to defend the actions of Hamas that day, and framing it all in like this anti-colonial kind of gobbledygook framework. And when DuCapo pushed back against him and was sort of surprised at what he was hearing, he was dogpiled online by a bunch of left-wing viewers. And I think that something kind of changed in him a little bit that day, where he sort of felt like he'd shaken off the chains of needing to appeal to these people, right? It was like, well, look, if I'm going to get yelled at for asking basic, decent questions, then I'm not going to try to hue to whatever you want me to do. He started giving himself, I think, social permission to maybe consider the other side a little bit. And everything that we've seen since then has kind of just been another step along that evolution. I don't think the man's going to turn into a staunch right winger anytime soon. But he is eminently more reasonable than many of his peers, and I think that's why we were all kind of hopeful when we heard that Barry Weiss had picked him for CBS Evening News.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and his interview with Trump, based on how his peers in the media reacted, certainly went a lot better than it could have been with anyone else, and certainly better than other interviews we have seen before.
Yeah, and I mean, what was interesting to me about it was Trump's own, the president's own kind of candor with him and his approach to him, kind of hinted at some of that, right? It felt that the president was sort of had heard some things, right? That hey, maybe this guy will actually be a little bit more fair to you, and he was pretty even-handed throughout the interview, and you know, Trump kind of he responded in kind for the most part. He was not, we did not see the standard like, oh, what a stupid question, why would you ask something like that. We didn't see the standard takedowns that we were so accustomed to seeing when other major broadcast anchors interview the president. And so yeah, it just I don't know, the only part of the interview that really stuck out to me as a little bit foolish was when DuCapo kept pressing about specific international policy plans, because it's always idiotic when journalists do that, because you know full well that if the president, the State Department, and whoever else are in the middle of negotiations with a foreign country, you can't get them to tip their hand on national television, right? You can't expect them to do that. So that the whole line of questioning there near the beginning was kind of pointless, as far as, you know, what exactly we'll be doing on Iran. But everything after that, I think, was entirely eminently reasonable from Tony DuCapo.
So what does this say then also about the new direction Barry Weiss is taking CBS in?
Well, she is herself a liberal, but I think that she's the kind of person that you want running a news organization, because she's the kind of person who wants to make her own political proclivities matter as little as possible, or factor as little as possible into her decisions that she makes. I mean, that's basically the best you can hope for, because you will never find a truly apolitical person who wants to run a major political newsroom, right? So I think that Tony DeCoppola is a reflection of that kind of philosophy in Barry Weiss. And look, I mean, I have no animosity towards Chris Licht whatsoever. I think he's a good guy. But so far I think that Barry Weiss has done significantly more meaningful stuff at CBS, made considerably more impactful, lasting, beneficial changes at CBS News than Chris Licht ever managed to make within, what was it, like 2 years running CNN, something like that. He fired John Harwood, Don Lemon, Brian Stelter, although Stelter's back now. That was kind of it, right? I mean, we didn't see much else happen at CNN. And I think there was some apprehension, certainly among some of my coworkers, when we heard Barry Weiss was coming in at CBS, that it would be a similar situation. Everybody would be like, ooh, you know, big changes on the horizon, and then nothing really does change. But she's so far been quite active. She's kind of focusing like point by point by point, going from one show to another, where she dedicates most of her attention. And we're seeing those changes happen in real time. So if you're wondering, for example, why Face the Nation or 60 Minutes are still kind of standard broadcast network left-wing gobbledygook, it's because Barry Weiss has not come in yet to really hammer in some of the changes on those shows yet. But we're definitely seeing the changes on Evening News, and we're probably going to start seeing changes on CBS Mornings soon.
Mm-hmm. Well, certainly hopeful. And, you know, just in the lead up to this with Barry Weiss, I never really looked much into her, but seeing the reaction from the left, I just thought, well, she must be a card-carrying MAGA hat-wearing supporter.
You would think, wouldn't you? You would think. Yeah, no, New York Times alum. And by all accounts, a liberal. It's the issue is if you break ranks, if you ever grant the right the benefit of the doubt, if you're not willing to completely hew to the party line at all times, you kind of get excised from the movement. That's sort of what the left has become. They are defined by their purity spiraling above all else. And so, I mean, unfortunately for them, what that tends to do is embolden the people that they excommunicate to redouble their efforts and actually, you know, meaningfully push back when they might have stayed silent before they were, you know, public enemy number one.
Yeah, and then you see people engaging in bold acts of journalism like Tony DeCoppel because they see, well, that seems I have nothing to lose now.
Right, yeah. Yeah, exactly. And look, he has plenty to gain. The man just got appointed to be, or got chosen to be the anchor of a major broadcast evening news station, right? So it's all upswing for him currently. And I think that the general calculation being made was also, I will say, partly financial. So I think that DeCoppel fits in there as well, as we're trying to corner the more middle of the road market and not be in third among the three left wing broadcast networks. Mm-hmm.
Well, Liam DiAgostino of the Media Research Center, appreciate being on the Silk or Joe Show. Listeners, more to come after the break.
Nearly one in three U.S. medical students are now training to become doctors of osteopathic medicine. Dr. Robert Kane, president and CEO of the American Association of Colleges of Osteopathic Medicine, shares what's driving the surge and how it's shaping patient care.
Getting a routine appointment is becoming harder for many Americans, especially outside major cities. Demand for everyday and preventive care keeps rising, and many communities don't have enough physicians. Osteopathic medical education is helping meet that need by preparing doctors through whole person care, communication, and prevention, the skills patients rely on in clinics and hospitals. Our new study shows that osteopathic medical schools strengthen local economies and train physicians who often serve rural and underserved communities. It's a proven pathway more students are choosing. because it prepares them to deliver the primary and preventive care patients depend on.
Find more information at AACOM.org. That's AACOM.org.
So the relatives have gone home, the cookies are eaten, and look at that. You've got a nice little pile of gift cards. Now comes the fun part. Maybe you're the sensible type who'll stock up on essentials. Hey, groceries totally count as self-care. Or maybe this is your chance to finally grab that thing you've been eyeing since October. Here's a pro tip. Load those cards into your digital wallet right now. Trust me, nothing's worse than finding a gift card in your junk drawer 6 months from now. Plus, those post-holiday sales, the best. You're basically spending free money. Stack your gift cards with clearance prices, rack up loyalty points, and watch the savings multiply. That's the beauty of gift cards. They work however you work. For nearly 20 years, they have been the most requested gift, and it's easy to see why. They're not just convenient, they're like having a permission slip to get exactly what you want. Brought to you by the Retail Gift Card Association.
The holidays are upon us, and that means office parties, entertaining friends and neighbors, and holiday gatherings with family. But hosting can be overwhelming. If you're in charge of the turkey this year, help is just a phone call away. Butterball Turkey Talk Line expert Andrea Balatevich tells us more.
The Butterball Turkey Talk Line is in its 44th year, and there are more ways than ever to reach us. We have over 50 experts standing by to answer your questions by phone, text, social media, or chat at butterball.com. We are here to help determine how much turkey to buy, how long it will take to thaw, and how best to prepare it to both wow your guests and enjoy time together. We'll be available at the Butterball Turkey Talk Line until December 24th should a turkey emergency happen. No matter how you plan to host, the Butterball Turkey Talk Line is here to help. Just call 1-800-BUTTERBALL.
Find more resources and information online at butterball.com.
Steven.
Who said that?
Me, down here.
What are you, a yellow booger?
I'm a banana slug, Steven.
Well, what are you doing in my room?
I'm your sense of adventure. Don't you remember me? Don't you know that we miss you?
Miss me? Who misses me?
You know, all your friends in the forest. The trees, the pond, that little fort that you made out of branches. We all miss you.
Mom took me to the forest last year.
I'm a slug, Steven. It took me a long time to get here.
Oh, I guess that makes sense.
The forest is not that far away. Have an adventure today. I'm sure your mom would take you.
You're right. I should get out. I want to have fun. Play in puddles, catch frogs, and climb trees. Hey, Mom!
Yeah, hon?
Steven! What is that in your hand?
It's my sense of adventure, Mom. It's telling me we need to get out of the house and have some fun in nature today.
Come to the forest where the more adventurous you lives. Check out discovertheforest.org for cool places nearby. Brought to you by the U.S. Forest Service and the Ad Council.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here. Probably. Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzz driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show. Everybody, co-host Joe with you all today. And if you were listening to the reruns over the break, then you would have heard 2 weeks ago now. Two Saturdays ago anyway. A rerun of the trip to Yuma that I did and the interviews I did there. And we're now talking with someone who I met down there who was on that trip that came courtesy of Americans for Prosperity and Stand Together. We are joined now by Laura Karch. She is a senior executive assistant to the CEO and board secretary at the Middle East Institute and is also a Middle East History and Peace Fellow with Young Voices, as well as a senior contributor with them. Laura Karch, happy to have you on the show. How are you today?
Thank you so much for having me. I'm doing well, thank you. How are you?
I'm doing well, thank you. Glad to have you. So In our emails, we were talking about the E. coli outbreaks that were related to possibly related to border crossings at Yuma, because as we saw, and as our anyone looking at our, the Mainstream Radio Network social media pages saw at the border, you know, there's the wall right there, then there's farmland next to it. And what have you found about this?
Right, exactly. Well, we found that, you know, with the border holes in the wall, tens of thousands of migrants were able to slip in. And of course, with the absence of any toilets or porta potties, they were relieving themselves in the field. You know, along with that, that presented a huge risk for the local farmers. And I personally looked up how many E. coli outbreaks there were in 2022 during the surge year. And I believe there were two big ones, according to an FDA report. So it certainly did affect our food security.
Yeah, and I saw some, you know, in trying to look that up, I found older ones, too, that seemed to be related to border surges. There was one that started, seemed in April of 2018, and right around that time as well, the Arizona governor was sending National Guardsmen to the border, and CBS was reporting that was in support of Trump issuing a memo declaring a crisis at the border, with CBS itself admitting there was an increase in border crossings. Then you have in October 11th, the Associated Press reported two larger groups of migrants from Guatemala and Honduras were also found near Yuma at the border. And sure enough, in November of 2018, have a E. coli outbreak from Yuma's romaine lettuce. And it goes even farther back than that into 2005. There was a border surge then of 138,000 people. And 2006 is when security really started in response to it. But then in September of 2005, there was an outbreak of E. coli and romaine lettuce then, too.
Wow. Now there's a story, Joe. We've got ourselves a story.
Yeah. Don't put your farmland so close to an unsecured border when people are just crossing over at will. And, you know, for all the walls that we and holes in the walls that would have existed in 2022, back in 2005 and even 2018, there would have been nothing there. And, I mean, you and I both saw that. Can you imagine there just being nothing where that border wall was between the farmland and people crossing over?
Well, that's where it becomes more of a humanitarian issue than a political one, which is one of the main takes that I got from this trip. You know, if you think about it physically, there was nowhere to put everyone. There were no porta potties at the time. And, you know, all they had were tents to save people from the heat. But even then, people were dying from heat exhaustion. So when you have tens of thousands of people slipping into the holes with no infrastructure for them to essentially live, then, you know, there's nowhere else for them to defecate, unfortunately.
Yeah, and the Biden administration, they seem somewhat aware of humanitarian issues at the border, despite their bad-mouthing the idea of border enforcement when there was the media kerfluffle over the Haitian migrant camps that were along the border that were in such poor conditions, and then the Biden administration made a deal with Haiti for sending some of those folks back. So it seems like they really only cared, though, when there was actual media pressure. When there wasn't, then, you know, it was just up to the Border Patrol, which was overwhelmed, understaffed, and the local communities, which, you know, you have thousands coming per day in a community of only thousands.
Right, exactly. And I think it's important to remember that under the Biden administration, they had the catch and release policy, which resulted in more than, I think it was 3 million illegal immigrants released into the United States, many being cartel related. You know, there was proof in the numbers, proof in the stats. And the reality of this catch and release policy really overwhelmed Yuma's local food banks and hospitals that were already, you know, the only places of help for the people of Yuma. So more resources were spent on non-residents who also needed help than the actual residents that lived there. So that was a huge deal, you know, versus the implementation of the Title 42, which, you know, was immediate detainment and expulsion from the country, which, as you know, law enforcement in Yuma told us that this was what brought the numbers down significantly. I think it was to about like 200 to 300 per year versus per day under Biden. So, you know, in mainstream media, we all saw that the media framed the Arizona officials as anti-immigration, whereas many were actually openly pro-immigration and were just asking for some kind of reform that helped save people's lives and safety of American residents.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of the big things that they were talking about pushing for was while we were there was reform to the H-2A visa system. You know, we talked with the local farmer was it Corey Mellon? I don't have this name right in front of me, but I remember his last name was Mellon because that was so suitable for someone with a farm. But he was talking about H-2A reform and how they use H-2A visa workers. And in particular, you know, this ties into immigrant surges, how one of the reasons Americans can't really do the jobs an H-2A worker would do is because, you know, you're only going in there to pick the fields like once a year. You're there for a couple of weeks and then you're gone unless there's another crop for you to pick later on. So what happens the rest of the year? The community like Yuma can't support a huge population that's unemployed for most of the year. So how could they be expected to support free open borders?
Exactly. And what struck me most is the absence of politics in Yuma specifically. You know, we saw the mayor, a former border chief and county supervisor and a farmer all agree and be on the same page about this. You know, we need a better system. And at the same time, Corey Mellon does need the visa holders for the labor, he did express. And that's the reality of things. So closed borders, what I got from that is that closed borders are not completely the solution, but we do need a better H-2A system that doesn't have the same complexity and bureaucracy, longer wait times, and keeping our officers in the office rather than protecting the land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also making sure that we have Border Patrol agents out there doing their job, because that was another thing, too, that they mentioned. For all the stuff that the Border Patrol agents have been, all the flack they've been catching during that time, and, you know, at the same time that they're out there processing all these people and saving their lives because Border Patrol agents were the first responders at the border. You know, it wasn't like there was an ambulance or firefighter roaming around the border to make sure everyone was okay coming over. It was up to Border Patrol. They found someone sick or injured. They were the ones who ended up helping them. But then at that time, the Biden administration was out there seeming to do everything they could to make the Border Patrol look bad, like that thing with the alleged whipping of migrants crossing when, in fact, it was just someone, a Border Patrol agent, riding a horse.
Right, exactly. And pair this with a bunch of bureaucracy that backlogs the entire system. You know, we're going to have a crisis.
And certainly we ended up with one. And, credit to the people of Yuma, Arizona for being able to work their way through the crisis and for the Border Patrol to do what they did in order to mitigate that crisis, even if in some cases it was against the orders of the Biden administration, like when they were told to release thousands of migrants into the communities, and you know they knew that was going to be a disaster, so they didn't.
Right, exactly. And I do hear that they are preparing for a more stepped up enforcement at this point this year. So I'm hoping people like Corey and the other residents of Yuma are feeling a little bit better about things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because there's a lot there that needs to be protected. Actually, that was one thing that struck me I'm surprised there wasn't a disaster. When we were standing there at the border wall, I could see in the distance a power plant, you know, servicing the area of Yuma. And the time during which the Biden administration canceled the contracts for the border wall and left those big gaps there, you know, that was the 20th anniversary of 9/11 that passed in that time frame. So that was a huge vulnerability right there that hadn't been handled.
Right, exactly. And imagine if people are defecating in our food, what's happening when they're bathing in the water resources that are around that area?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the Colorado River flows right through there. And actually, some of the E. coli outbreaks I saw, at least one of them anyway, was traced to the water supply, to water being used to irrigate the fields being contaminated. Well, that is a strong possibility it was contaminated by that very thing you described.
There it is. I totally believe it.
It's something that you don't think about when you're maybe looking at it on Google Maps or when you're sitting at home reading about it in the papers. You don't see or seeing the videos on TV. You're not seeing the full picture of what's around the border wall. You're not seeing the surrounding. You're not seeing what people are crossing to get into the country. You're not seeing, you think, oh, there's like a town right there at the border. Well, yes, technically Yuma's right at the border, but you got miles of farmland before you get to the town. So the proximity idea that we have in our heads versus reality is way different.
Exactly. And the mainstream media also really, really failed in this case because they were just focused on twisting the narrative. You know, we all saw them trying to frame Chief Clem as an anti-immigration leader, whereas as we know, they are all pro-immigration, and they just need some reform help to water.
Well, Laura Karch, appreciate you being on the Silk Road Joe Show to talk about this. Real quick, where can listeners find more of your work? We got about 10 seconds left.
Thank you so much for having me. I guess find me on Twitter or X at Laura Karch.
All right, listeners, that's something for you to check out during the break. But on the other side, we got more Silk Road Joe Show.
The first ever Bush's Boca Raton Bowl of Beans was a simmering success. The first 2,000 fans who brought a can of Bush's beans to the stadium traded it for free entry into the game's MV Bean section, with every can donated to support local families in need. Actor and maestro Keegan-Michael Key says beans and football make a great game day pair.
There's this kind of warm, family, traditional feeling about this particular company, about Bush's, and it's part of why they wanted to identify themselves with a bowl game, because it's another very traditional, warm thing, especially in December, right? They went above and beyond in regard to branding and being a sponsor.
Fans enjoyed a pregame bean bash, and during the game, fans sported Bush's beans all over bucket hats, turning the stadium into a literal bowl of beans. And waiting for the victor, a trophy full of slow-simmered baked beans to share in celebration. Congrats to the Louisville Cardinals. Find recipes and more online at bushesbeans.com.
Holiday shopping is not just about gifts under the tree. The year-end period can also be a smart time to shop for a new vehicle. James Bell from Kia America has more.
As we approach the year-end, dealers are looking to close out inventory, so customers that spend time doing some research and knowing where the opportunities are primed for hitting the bullseye.
A little research ahead of time can make a big difference. Knowing your credit score, setting a budget, and narrowing down the vehicle you want before you arrive can help you stay focused and save time.
When buyers come in armed with information, the dealers are going to respect that and make sure that that process moves quickly and efficiently.
Waiting until the final days of the year can also tip the balance in a buyer's favor. With sales books closing between Christmas and New Year's Eve, dealerships are often focused on closing deals and setting up long-term customer relationships before the calendar turns. More information is available at Kia.com.
The Medicare annual enrollment period runs each year from October 15th through December 7th, and it's an important time of year for the millions of Americans who already enjoy Medicare coverage. It's their chance to compare plan options for 2026. We know that Medicare coverage can be confusing. One thing I recommend to help navigate through the process is really focus on two things: cost and coverage. For cost, you want to consider things like the plan's premium, deductibles, copay or coinsurance. And for coverage, you should look not only at the medical coverage, things like hospital and doctor visits, but also prescription drug coverage and any extra benefits. The annual enrollment period runs from October 15th through December 7th. It's a great time to compare those cost and coverage of the plans available. Lots of options to consider for your Medicare choices in 2026. To help you navigate, I would recommend starting with a visit to MedicareEducation.com.
My name is Judy Teeter, and I'm the mother of three boys. My youngest, Joe, was a great kid. He loved sports, music, and his youth group. One day, Joe asked me to drive him to an after-school event, which was about a mile from our home. I was driving through a green light when a car in cross traffic ran a red light and drove right into the side of our car, killing Joe. The driver was talking on her phone, so she never even saw the red light. She was so absorbed in her phone call. Before the crash, I didn't realize just talking on a cell phone while driving was so dangerous. Now it's something I think about every day. According to the National Safety Council, about 1 in 4 car crashes involves a cell phone. Hands-free is no safer. When you're behind the wheel, put away your phone. For Joe and for the thousands of needless deaths every year, remember, there is no safe way to talk on a cell phone while driving. Find out more at nsc.org/callskill.
I'm Ben Affleck, and I want to thank you for joining me and supporting Paralyzed Veterans of America. Our vets need you.
I'm a quadriplegic. I'm definitely at risk with my diminished lung capacity.
I have MS. I'm in a wheelchair, and I can't leave the house because I have a compromised immune system.
I'm very concerned about, would there be a bed for me? Would there be a ventilator for me? Would I be able to survive something?
It's just heavy. You know, it's a heavy moment.
This is a war. This really is.
Our veterans fought for us. Let's fight for them.
I am so grateful for the PVA. They're making sure that we have all of the food and supplies that we need right now.
Y'all gotta help each other right now. We can't get through this by ourselves.
It's with profound gratitude that you're gonna be saving our lives.
To find out how you can help, please go to helppva.org. That's helppva.org.
Welcome back to the Silker Joe Show, everybody. Co-host Joe with y'all today. Thanks for wrapping up with us on the program. Just wanted to check something real quick in my emails here to see if I made a major screw-up or not. Yep. Okay, I'm good. All right, yeah. Anyway, so the United Kingdom, they released a video game aimed at educating students on radicalization. They since taken it back, though, because not because of how stupid it was or how the message was, but because it was actually having the opposite effect. It kind of made radicalizing seem a bit more attractive. You know, the game told school kids, though, that if they research something for themselves, they are terrorists. Just blindly obey government propaganda. You know, sounds kind of familiar, like we have some people in the U.S. right now, like we had a whole 4 years of some people in the U.S. that were doing that. Meanwhile, the United Kingdom is about to institute a new law and institute new technologies, allowing them to examine every single text message you send on any texting app, and if you say something the government disapproves of, you are in prison. We're not talking bomb threats. We're talking if you say, I don't like this politician, or using a slur against someone, or saying you think immigration policy needs to be stricter, that's what will land you in prison. Just texting that to a friend. Now, leftists say this is acceptable, this is democratic, this is how you have debate in society. The British government insists they're just doing this as a crime prevention method and to protect against human trafficking or something. Yet they had no problem with Muslim rape gangs and Muslims carrying native UK citizens carrying weapons in public, and Muslims discriminating openly against people. Instead, they arrest whites and native UK citizens for much less offenses than what Muslims are allowed to get away with. Mosques spew anti-Western hatred, but the UK government ignores it. Meanwhile, someone makes a post saying we need tighter immigration controls or they disagree with the Muslims, and they get arrested. Muslim rape gangs again are allowed free rein, but teens are arrested when they try to defend themselves. It's anarcho-tyranny. If I said any of this in the UK, I would be arrested. If I texted any of that in the UK, I would be arrested. I saw a chart the other day showing countries listed based on the most arrests for social media posts. UK was at the top. Russia and China weren't even close. You know, we talk about, oh, Russia is this oppressive autocracy, you can't insult Putin or whatever. Yeah, but you're three times more likely to get arrested over a social media post in UK than in Russia. So England is finished. I say we cut them off. They're not an ally anymore. What kind of foreign policy do we have that we let allies get away with this? Is this some sort of Cold War stuff where we let banana republics get away with crimes against humanity because they're a block against the Soviets on the international tic-tac-toe board? We at least need a travel advisory. Like, every segment of this show, I say something that'd get me arrested if I said it over there. Not just this show I'm doing now, like every show I've hosted. There's probably something in every segment that would get me arrested if I said it in the United Kingdom. In fact, their laws are so loose that they could go back and listen to the hours upon hours upon hours that I've done over the 5 years that I've been hosting things and look up stuff in there and find something, you know, maybe from November of 2020 when I first started hosting these shows. They could find something from that and arrest me for that if I went over right now. So I'd say a travel advisory is in order. Some poignant online comments I saw related to this included suggesting that Iran is trying to become UK while UK is trying to become Iran, and also that we should have snatched the UK's prime minister instead of Maduro. Can't say I object and disagree. Should we be surprised that the American left wants the same thing here, though? Of course not. They are protesting in support of the Iranian regime, which is executing dissidents right now, something Democrats wanted for those involved with January 6th, something they wanted for Trump. At the Golden Globes, major award ceremony that happened over the weekend, last weekend, they didn't honor an Iranian director executed by the regime, but they sure honored a domestic terrorist wannabe cop killer. They've never honored anyone who was killed by an illegal immigrant, but boy, someone who tried to kill an ICE agent is a hero. Leftists here also sided with the tyrannical Maduro regime and even tried to convince Venezuelans they were better off under him. And you can see Venezuelans on social media absolutely toasting domestic leftists. And, you know, we also have conflicting protests in the U.S. about the Iranian regime. You have alleged pro-feminist Westerners attacking Iranians in the streets of the U.S. who are against the Iranian regime. And same thing, I have no doubt that if there had been time for pro and anti-Maduro protests in the U.S. before he was taken out, we would have seen the same thing. Liberals are just absolutely bonkers in this, and you think that those same liberals wouldn't want what they have in the UK, where you can get arrested for a text message if it's mildly against what the government wants you to say. I've mentioned it before. It was either on the Al Nathan show or this show, where, you know, they kind of already do that sort of thing. They just can't read your text. Someone has to turn you in. But this woman who was sexually assaulted, she insulted the person who assaulted her. And she did that just in a text message to a friend, referring to the person who assaulted her with a derogatory term. And because of that, her friend turned her in, police raided her home, yanked her naked out of the bathtub, all because she insulted the person who sexually assaulted her in a text message to a friend. Well, former friend, I should hope at this point. And now the United Kingdom wants the authority to go into your text messages at will, not just wait for someone to turn you in, but go into at will so they can arrest more people like that. And that's supposed to be a liberal government. That's supposed to be the kind of thing that we're supporting with our aid money, with our defense money. We're supposed to put our soldiers at risk to save a place like that. What's the point? Like, I talked with this, was at the beginning of this year, where I talked with one of those rhinos, Republican in name onlys or whatever, one of the never Trumpers, and I mentioned some of the oppression that's going on in the UK, and he said, so what, at least they're not Russia because Russia invaded people. Yeah, well, UK would probably be invade people too if they had a military, but all they have are a couple of nuclear weapons, and that's about it. Their military is a joke. So, but if they had one, would they really, do you think they wouldn't be a threat? Because right now you have police chiefs in the UK who have issued warnings to American citizens, we're going to find a way to arrest you. If you say something we don't like on social media, we're going to find a way to arrest you. Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if somehow they caught wind of this segment, some police chief in Londonistan or whatever decided, hey, I'm going to try and arrest this guy as well. I'm going to come up with some legal framework, maybe trick him into coming to the UK with a free trip or something so that we can put him in handcuffs when he comes off the plane. You know, so again, travel advisories, folks, travel advisories. But yeah, if they had the power, they absolutely would be imposing this on the rest of the world. Don't, because they've already talked about doing it and while they're in a position of having no power. And look at the fines that they're trying to levy against X for allowing free speech on their platform, even though it's an American platform. They're still trying to fine them for not adhering to censorship. So yes, they would extend their will overseas if they could. Are they really the allies that we want? Maybe it's not too late to whip them into shape or something. Certainly they're not going to do it themselves. Anyway, that's it for this edition of the Silk or Joshu. Appreciate you tuning in for this hour of the program. And our websites are at least available in the U.S. Maybe if you're in the U.K., you'll get arrested for looking them up. Our mainstreamnetwork.com and alannathan.com for the other show that we do every day of the week, 5 days a week. Be seeing you.
The opinions you hear on the Main Street Radio Network are those of the hosts, callers, and guests, and not necessarily those of the station, Main Street Radio Network, its management, or advertisers. The information on the Main Street Radio Network does not constitute a recommendation, offer, or solicitation to buy or sell any product or securities. Please consult a professional before investing. If you have any questions or comments about Main Street Radio Network, contact us at 703-978-0600 or at our website, mainstreetradionetwork.com.